grind.
Alright, where are you going? Here, okay?
Grind.
Oh my god.
Not coming in, I figured it, man.
Good job, buddy.
The Hunt for Answers. The Ugly Pike Podcast.
Alright, welcome back to the Ugly Pike Podcast. Today, super special episode, Red October Baits, makers of the world's biggest and baddest tube jigs. Don't be scared. We got the band back together. Not that they ever broke up, but at least now all in the same room. We're going to jump right in a few seconds, but before that, a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Canada's only specialized pike and musky shop, Izoco. Head over to izocofishing.com and check out all the amazing hand-picked top-quality gear they have to offer. This episode is also proudly sponsored by Angling Sports, based in London, Ontario, and serving customers throughout Canada and the northern U.S. With over 30 years of unmatched angler support, they offer top-tier fishing products catering to every skill level. Explore their offerings at anglingsports.ca and gear up for an unparalleled fishing experience. So, Frank, I will now pass the honors over to you to individually introduce the three guys sitting with you today.
First of all, Chris, first take on the sponsors. Congratulations. That was a and maybe after 157 episodes, I'll remember the echo noise cancellation and do my part for a smooth start on the next
Just a quick fun fact here. Red October Baits 2017 episode 13. That's how long ago we talked to these guys. We're at 158 now. Nice.
And I'm going to introduce everybody at the table here. Actually, I'll do that right now. We've got Josh Ketchery, also known as my brother from another mother.
What's up?
Black belt, Buff United Martial Arts.
You're not Eskimo brothers, are you?
We're not Eskimo brothers. No. But
these guys sign a waiver.
The day is young. We have Mark Arena, co-founder of and current operator of Red October Baits, at the table.
Hey, hey.
And we have Hans Mann, Buffalo Harbor Outfitters, catcher of giants on Lake Erie and
the Carver,
of some of the best custom baits and custom mounts you'll ever see.
Hans, great to be here.
Awesome. The other thing I want to say is what's missing from this table is probably about 150 pounds of weight loss between everybody at the table. Your journey, you've lost how much so far?
I lost 40 pounds on carnivore diet because I had autoimmune issues. And so I switched to carnivore diet, lost 40 pounds, and then I started feeling so good again. All my autoimmune issues went away. I had clinical anxiety too. That went away. And then I started competing in jiu-jitsu again. I hadn't competed in like 10 years, and like all the inflammation went out of my hands and stuff, and I decided to compete again. So I started feeling really good, and now I can't shut up about how important I think diet is to feeling good. So,
Josh, does it work?
What's that?
I mean the carnivore diet. I have alopecia areata. I don't know if you know what that is. It's an autoimmune issue, and I have some inflammation issues, and everything I read always leads to that diet. Like, go on the carnivore diet. And I think Frank and I talked about this a couple months ago. Like, I try it. I just can't get past 3 days before I give up. So if I hear from you that it's worth it, you know, maybe I got to give it a better shot.
So for me, it was worth it because I was suffering so much, right? I had symptoms of MS. So I was off balance. I was having trouble seeing. I was having hot and cold flashes. And for me, I couldn't drive a car. I was having trouble driving a car, and I was not training jiu-jitsu, and I was miserable. And I saw one of my friends on the internet. He had MS really bad, where, like, you know, lesions all over his brain. And he was, like, so bad that he was in bed and, like, you know, like, basically couldn't control his bladder, all this stuff. And then I saw him, like, all of a sudden, like, running around, like, running on the beaches and stuff. And I was like, wow, you know. I was like, what'd you do? And he's like, I ate meat. And I was like, okay, whatever. But then, like, a bunch of time went by and I started getting the symptoms, and I kind of realized what they were. And I remembered that moment, and I went back and asked him. He just said, no, seriously, like, eat meat, eat red meat. Don't eat anything else and see what happens. He's like, you're eating poison. This is what he told me. He goes, you're eating poison. Stop being the poison. And you'll stop having the symptoms. And that's what happened. And I've seen it, man, I've seen it 100 times with my own eyes. Very, very rarely have I seen someone do carnivore diet and not have positive results. And I'm talking rheumatoid arthritis, MS. Like MS, he cured his MS. And when I say cured, that's a strong word, right? But he doesn't have lesions on his brain anymore. His lesions remyelinated. And what doctors are doing that? What doctors are getting people off medicine? So this is like a fierce, I fiercely stand on this hill. I don't mean to sound like so, I don't know, up but about it. But yeah, I would strongly recommend it. And here's the thing. It's hard to do. Like you said, it's hard to have the discipline to only eat meat, salt, and water. But for me, when I was suffering, it was a choice between the two sufferings, right? And so I tried it and it worked. So maybe like if you're not suffering enough, then it's hard to have that discipline. But I try to coach myself in my head a lot. And I tell myself like be the coach that's going to say the right things to me, you know? And that is self-discipline is the key to most of the things you want, right? So that's all.
I've had that discipline in my life, like many times where I've had to like, you know, set a goal and just whatever it took, I had to do it. But for some reason, it's just the food is, I find it's so hard, you know, especially I have an Italian wife. Mm-hmm. She cooks such good food. It's full of carbs, the pasta. And I got two kids that, you know, like are just as hungry as me. And then to sit there and say, nope, I can't eat any of that. I just want some meat on the side. I like I said, I can't get past 3 or 4 days and then I give up. So I have to figure out a way to get over that and just put a concerted effort in and go for at least like a month and see what happens.
We're only here to talk.
Yeah. I want to say one more thing. Like I could make this the whole podcast. I'm sorry. Like it's something I feel very strongly about, but I just want to say one last thing. I think it's more about paying attention to like what not to eat. Like don't eat the seed oils. Don't eat the soy. Don't eat the processed wheats that are sprayed with glyphosate, Roundup. Don't drink the beer that's full of glyphosate, Roundup, right? Like don't eat the poisons that you know are poisons. And you can pretty much eat like, just eat food. Like chop the outside aisles of the market. Go there and go, I'm going to eat some meat. I'm going to eat some cheese, try to get raw cheese, like stuff that has touched less hands and has less chance of having poison in it. Cause that's what it is. It's our food is being poisoned.
Fair enough.
So, all right. Next.
Yeah. That's an hour, 2 hours on its own.
I could unload that a lot, but
What about you, Mark? How much are you down?
I'm down.
You're down like a person.
No, I went from like 237 where I started, and I got down to 193. And now I'm hovering around 200 since Thanksgiving.
You still look great.
I had a little relapse.
So almost 40 pounds?
Yeah. Yeah. And Chris, let me throw this at you. One of the ways that because I've bounced on and off of this thing for a while. If you do maybe a 2 or 3 day fast and then start with the meats, it's a little easier. For me anyways, you know.
So your weight loss was a result of the carnivore diet as well?
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Nice.
Just eating mostly beef, but I do eat a little bit of seafood. I eat some crab legs and shrimp. But I would say 90% of it's beef. So I had a little different motivation, I think, than Josh. I have 3 very young children, and I was feeling old and fat. So I decided to do something.
I hear you.
Yeah. Dude, I hear that too. What about yourself?
Oh, well, I took it to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
You know, this was something where, I mean, I was a tremendous, tremendous fat ass there for a little while. I mean, I got up to 575 pounds.
Oh my God!
When you knew me, and you didn't even know that I was that much.
I thought you were 4 something.
No, I was gigantic,
dude. People,
but like I was also probably the most active 575-pound man that is around.
Holy cow!
When you came to that interview,
I was around that. I never stopped. But what was that?
When you came to my house for the first interview together, was that roughly your weight around then?
No, I was a little bit less then.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, I really, you know, through, you know, changes in my job and things like that, like I just started packing them on. I had a very sedentary job. I worked in the jails for a little while. And during that time, it was just a very, you know, you ate a lot and you ate a lot of garbage. And I just blew up and blew up and blew up. And it was the same thing where, I mean, I looked at my kids and I mean, now I'm a full-time guide doing what I love and I'm carving fish and I'm making lures and I literally am figuring out a way to, you know, make a living doing what I love. And I, you know, looked at my family's eyes and I said, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And I'm going to screw this all up. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was something where, I mean, I, I also am a very big supporter of the carnivore, or very close to carnivore. I'd say I'm now, just to preface this whole thing, I cheated. I had a man remove 91% of my stomach. So basically I can't take all the credit for it. But when it all comes down to it, I now have a smaller stomach, and I now eat like probably 80% meat. And I mean, we really try to stick to the just as natural as we can get. I mean, my wife is big on the less than three ingredients situation.
Yeah.
Just going around. I mean, we do all the farm shares. We get a cow every year and just try to eat pure. Like what Josh said, there's so much poison in everything that they've given us. It just is meant to keep us fat and keep us, I mean, obesity is the number one killer in America by far.
Yeah. You know, so what's your current weight?
I'm 366 of this morning. So
that's amazing.
Oh, what are these going?
I'm felt. Over 200 down.
That's amazing, man.
What was your playing weight today?
350. Nice. And obviously I've lost a lot of muscle since then, but I mean, I plan to get down to around 300, and I'm back in the gym now. So
yeah. And for everybody who doesn't know, Hans is 6'7".
Just under 6'6".
Just under, so that's it. Just under 6'6". So you know what? At 300, you know, you might sit there and think, oh my God, 300. But when you're really tall, you know, it matters. When you're really short like me, it matters. I feel stupid to say I'm down 17 pounds, but I'm down 17 pounds.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I had too much to go, but like same as you guys, I've got young kids, and you know, I my blood pressure is giving me some problems, and you know what? Before I go on any meds, which I probably am not going to do, I'm going to give it a. Not that I needed to really change my lifestyle a lot, I needed to make some small tweaks, and they made a big difference. And you know what? Processed foods, sugar, avoiding sugar like it's the devil. Because it is really made a big difference. So, that's the long introduction. Holy cow.
That's a good new information for
me. Yeah, some inspiring stories, though.
But can I say one last thing? I'm sorry. If you're listening to this podcast and you're suffering or know someone who's suffering, just try it. Just do it like you don't believe us. Like, don't. Just eat red meat, salt, and water for 8 weeks and record your metrics and see if you feel better. And then ask yourself, are they putting something in our food that we should not be eating? Because they are. So that's it. You can prove it to yourself.
You have some writings on this stuff, right? I mean,
I do quite a few. You want me to pitch this?
If you're comfortable, yeah, of course.
There's a Substack called the Society of Problem Solvers. I'm one of the ghostwriters for it. And if you see something on carnivore about on that blog, it's usually for me. So I try to interview a whole bunch of people that cured themselves, you know. And people think that science is about maximizing citations. This is not the case. It's about maximizing repeatable experiments. You know, how many citations does Einstein have?
That's the method. That's the scientific method.
Yeah. I mean, look at Einstein. Does he have any citations? No. But we're repeating his discoveries every day when we use our cell phones. Or someone like Maxwell, who his equations helped us with electricity. We're repeating that every day. We're all running the same experiments when we turn a light on or turn a light off. And if you can stop eating poison and feel better, then that's an experiment you can do yourself. You don't have to believe anyone. You don't have to listen to your doctor. You can just go do it. And so far with my own eyes, I've seen over 100 people cure themselves from autoimmune disease. It's to the point where I don't believe.
Chris, are you standing near a wrestling brook? Did you find water?
Sorry, I just put on the kettle. Hang on.
I thought you found water in the desert. I was going to congratulate you.
That's hilarious.
Sorry, Josh, go ahead.
No, I want my last.
Go ahead, Frank. I'm just going to.
That's okay.
Just my mindset with it is just that, like, I don't, this is a bold statement, probably one of the boldest statements I ever came to on my own, but I challenge the doctors. I say, how come you're not getting people off meds and I'm seeing hundreds of people get off medication, thousands if you go online, thousands of people getting off their medications, and how come you're not getting people off their medications? And I no longer believe that autoimmune diseases are mostly diseases. I believe they're symptoms of poisoning. They're less than 100 years old, most of the diseases, and they changed when our food supply changed. So challenge me that. Prove me wrong if you're sick. And what else are you doing? Like, if you're sitting there sick right now and you're suffering, make a better decision and try to do something and just eat meat. Like, you can do it on a budget. Just try it. Hmm. All right. So that's my message.
Cool. Chris, this reminds us of our good friend Jay, who's going through a vicious bout of alopecia right now.
I had a really bad session in my 30s, and I had areata, which is like, it's like Cheeto-like. So I would just get spots all over me, but I didn't have it like neck down. It was all like my beard and my hair. And I went to a great doctor in Toronto. He was a dermatologist. And I would say, you know, all my friends tell me it's stress. And he just said, that's not stress. It's just, we don't know what it is.
Do you think we're more stressed today than the pioneers that we're coming across?
Exactly. You know, like, exactly.
There were children dying. They didn't have anxiety. They didn't have depression. We have inflammation caused by poison and poison in our system haywires. Yeah. We get leaky gut. The proteins go and they leak on your skin and you get psoriasis when it attacks it. So, all right,
Well, look, I mean, you can fish better if you don't know how to eat better. So it's a perfect preamble to why we're here today, Chris. It's so interesting. I mean,
it is.
I just did, you know, a couple back-to-back sessions on Hans's boat, and we talked about this over giant tubs of meat and cheese.
Yeah. Wonderful. Oh, yeah. Smoked meats.
There's a big pile here. This is airing, you know, a week after we do this today, but I just ran a story on Instagram, and the story is a giant pile of meat that's in between us right now. So if it sounds like we're chewing, we'll try our best not to sound like it. I don't know why I'm talking at the computer like the fucking microphone's not in front of my face. But Chris,
I think we all touched on it, that the impetus for all this is our kids, and we get to a point. I mean, we're all around roughly the same age, I think, and it just hits us all of a sudden. It's like you look down and you're like, I got to be here as long as I can, because when, you know, like there's such a void that you know, I have control of, that if I put the right things in my body and I take care of it, that I can extend that for a long time. But if I just treat myself like shit, I risk having a void in my little kid's life. So I think that's the impetus for all of us. I mean, it just hits you all of a sudden when you look down at your kids and they're like, yeah, I got to do what I can to make an example for them.
Well said.
So yeah, I mean,
tackle this.
We can start. I mean, like you guys are touching on this. I mean, okay. So Red October Baits, like individually, you guys clearly are all well accomplished individuals. You stand out in the muskie community with significant contributions, angling, guiding, your professional life. You know, you're setting these impressive standards at every level. So I'm just wondering, when you go back to the initial stages back in 2008, what kind of motivated you collectively to venture into this kind of muskie industry, and how did it come about? Like, what was the evolution for you three guys to put your minds together? Was there a problem, a gap in the market, or you just had like your business acumen, you wanted to put it together and start a company? Maybe speak a bit about how this all evolved.
I know, Amiga.
Go ahead, you go.
I honestly think it was a labor of love. It came out of love. We love catching muskies. We found a new way that was working really well. It was like dragging lures in the bottom. And we couldn't get enough lures to keep doing that because the company stopped making them. So a little old man on the internet sent us like videos of how to make little bass tubes. And we all used our individual skills and came together and helped each other like a group should. Like, there's no doubt about it. People solve problems better in groups, especially if you communicate well. And that's what we did. And we didn't really think of it as like a business at first. It was just, let's make some tubes to go fishing. And then people started asking us for them. I mean, the first cast was the one we got a 48 incher. So we're like, oh, that worked.
First cast when we
very like first.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my
very
God.
First one. And so then people were like, can we have some? And then we're like, we want to share that love. So we did. That's what happened. And then we all took different parts, I think. Like, you know, we all had different things that we were good at. And we accentuated all of them. And it was really cool to see. I learned so many lessons from Red October, the whole process. Taking, like, going from a company that was, like, literally $300 to being one of the, you know, more well-known, like, companies in the industry. And it was really cool to see, like, each step that we took along the way. So, I mean, what do you guys think? Kind of how it went, right?
Yeah, I did. I would say, first of all, super talented gentlemen, both Hans and Josh, in a lot of different aspects. But if I had to highlight what I think everybody kind of brought to the table as that kind of gelled between the three of us, Josh is really a type of guy who likes to be a catalyst and a beginner of things. He is not afraid to probe, question, you know, take advice, kick it around, whatever. So, you know, that talent of his was important for us to even get off the ground. Hans is supremely creative. He also has good vision and can see where something needs to get to. A lot of people actually see that, where we need to get to, but the hard part is figuring out how to do it there. You know, yeah. How do you get there?
Yeah.
So Hans was instrumental in the mechanics of it, like the actual building of how are we going to make these tubes? Like, what are we going to do? And then I think the thing I brought to the table is probably least impressive, but probably my best talent is I'm a grinder, and I don't mind working and working my ass off, and that's what I do.
You're a grinder, but you were also probably more business minded, I believe. Yeah. Like, you were good at running the business, which is why you're still running the business. Mm. You know what I mean? So, yeah. You know, we definitely, in our little, you know, and it was a very cool thing how it all worked out and how, I mean, through the whole process to where we are now with the three of us, I mean, you couldn't find, you know, three more different guys in some ways, you know what I mean? Like, but in other ways, obviously we're like, but I mean, there's just, it was a neat little, you know, a neat little relationship that spurred into something really great.
Well, it's obvious that whatever complementary dynamics were, it was the perfect, turned out to be pretty much the perfect recipe for bringing this product to the, you know, into the universe and a business that's sustaining today, which is in the musky world, it's hard. It's hard to have a business where you trade your time off because almost nobody has solved the issue of scaling. You know, you want to make money because you're trading off the time with your family, but it's really hard for some of these guys to scale their business. And I don't know if you guys have done that or you have done that at this point, Mark.
I would say it's still a work in progress. Obviously, it's still a work in progress.
I think you did a good job, Mark, scaling it.
Yeah.
You got the injection mold. Like, so just for you guys that don't know, like, so me and Hans aren't really part of Red October anymore. Mark took it over by himself. I opened a jiu-jitsu school. Hans had opened his guiding business and things like that. So we kind of, it was hard. It was hard to keep up with everything. And Mark, like a grinder that he said he was, took it on his back and ground it out for like many more years. And then he scaled it recently with getting an injection molder to help the process. And that was, I mean, you've seen good results with that, right? You're putting out some big numbers of tubes now.
Yeah, we actually have inventory for the last 8 months. First time in the, you know, the last 11 years. Yeah. So yeah, that's it. I got to give a shout out to my wife. I mean, there got to be a point where it was, she and I were packing orders and, you know, like it was, there was a couple of years where it was very close to me just being like, and it actually went through my mind, like, what the hell am I doing?
Cause you have a job.
Yeah.
Career.
I'm a teacher. Yeah.
A teacher.
So, you know, there were more than one occasion, I can remember one time distinctly sitting at my computer and thinking to myself, you know what, I had one bill to collect and I couldn't get a hold of the guy and I needed the cash. And I was just like, you know what, I don't even know if this is worth it anymore. Right. But stuck it out. That was probably like 2012 or 13. And then I would say 2015 is when things really started to take a different trajectory. And today, it hasn't stopped. Like that a bit of exponential growth has continued. Blessed to have awesome, awesome customers.
Yeah.
Work with a lot of great retailers, a lot of great guys in the industry that are, you know, real supportive and always looking for new opportunities to, you know, utilize what we provide to them. We got a lot of guides who also love the baits. They make it easy for their clients to catch fish. So, been blessed in a lot of ways. And
well, they're on every lake. Like every lake is throwing, every waterway, there's someone throwing a tube. And every show, you show up with a mountain of baits. And every time I ask you for help, you have something ready to go or you're about to. That's not always the case with a lot of these other bait makers where you just can't find inventory. Like, not the guys that hold their inventory back on purpose. I get that. It's a whole small batches and that sort of thing. But, you know, there's some guys that are doing this that just chase their tail to pump out inventory and they just never seem to get a handle on that.
Yeah. It's tough. It really is. Like to get ahead of it, it's taken me this long. I mean, it's taken literally a decade to get ahead of it.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox Angler's Paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear from bait casting to fly fishing and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco's more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and letting things free, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly,
marinated,
or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and musky tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style.
I was just going to say, when you guys started, what, like in the early days there, when you were saying that you couldn't get the tubes that you were looking for because they just weren't available, when you started making them available to other anglers, what were, like, did you get any feedback or how did the anglers respond to what you guys were putting out there?
Well, I mean,
we were fishing hard.
Yeah, we were fishing hard a lot and we were catching a ton of fish on our own bait. So, of course, that helped because people just, you know,
the truth.
They could feel that we were, you know, when we were talking at a booth at a show, like there was no bullshit. I mean, we were really out there using them and really out there catching them. They're probably, I mean, all three of our favorite baits to use. You know what I mean? So it's something where it wasn't a hard sell because we were living it. You know what I mean? It wasn't a, it never was hard in that manner because we all, you know, we made it because we loved them. So, you know, I think it all came down to, it took the musky world a long time to get down with the tube. You know, the tube doesn't look like much. Everything else has, you know, rattles back and forth or has blades or does this or has a huge twister tail or this or that or the other thing. And, you know, I think that subtlety is what actually makes them as good as they are. But it took a long time for people to say, these do just end up in fish's mouths all the time. We need to start buying these. You know what I mean? And that's what that was the nut to crack, I think. And I think once that finally, you know, we had a ton of people that were keeping it secret. You know, like they were catching fish on them. And I remember being like, so where's all the pictures? And they're like, well, we don't want anybody to know. You know what I mean? And we were like, oh, great.
So there was definitely.
Hans, you just touched on something that, like, well, when I first met Mark, one of the first things he made quite clear was that there's like a misconception about tube jigs that they're just used as a throwback bait that, you know, when you contact a fish, you would just throw or pitch back as a last method to try to, you know, entice that strike. But, you know, he went on to show us in that amazing production that he had, like all the different uses and situations and how adaptable and how versatile the bait actually was. And I was just blown away. It was like I was in a lecture. Frank, I think you remember that as well. Like, we didn't really know how to rig or how to set up a tube effectively. Now, we, you know, everybody has their own way and they have confidence and maybe their own, individual method. But there was clearly a design purpose for this type of tube and this weight ratio. And if it's a vertical jig, if it's a straight retrieve. So I learned all that from when Mark was speaking and I was just blown away. And it's such a versatile bait.
Yeah.
Or even how to use it at all. I mean, I learned, and I don't know, Chris, this is probably a question you have written down for later because we discussed it, but one of you guys says to drag the tube on the bottom. The other guy says to pop the tube up and down. Who's right?
Even between the three of us, like all three of us.
Or Mark, I don't even know Mark's position, but I know yours. And I
use
yours.
A lot more weight than
Brian. Yeah, so we all have three different ways. Even like just jigging alone, we have three different ways we prefer. I prefer to grind the bottom. Hans prefers to hover above the bottom. And Mark puts on a heavy weight and fucking rattles it around and smacks in the head. And we all have different days where we do good. Or sometimes we all do good. It's like, it's hard to say. But then when casting, Mark, I mean, I've never seen someone move a tube like Mark moves a tube. He rips it through the water. It flies back in. I like to like swoop and linger and kind of hop along, and Hans is like in the middle, does both. And it's like, you know,
we've actually journeyed on to ripping it too.
You rip the hell out of it.
Yeah, that's how we get all those.
So I just changed my game.
All those fish on the Larry, they want it fast and fast, man, and nasty.
All year, all season.
All season.
I got to change my game up because
in the cold water, you can slow it down a little.
Yeah.
But I mean, so many fish come on the first four desperate pops,
right?
Like when you throw that tube up into trouble, and you're trying to get it to not hit those weeds, and you pop it, pop, 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 and they just bam, right?
You're really trying to get the lure back.
You're rod tip up.
You're not even thinking of fish at that point. You're just trying to keep it clean.
You literally are not thinking about the fish. You're thinking about, I don't want to feel the goo.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you feel like
it. And it lends itself to
the fish. You know what I mean?
It's a natural hook set too. I mean, you're like, pop and pop, pop, and fish on.
Right. And then you just carry on to this big, huge, sweeping hook set. It does keep the rod in front of you and let it have it, you know.
Cool.
I got a guy on the Susquehanna. He literally lets the tube sit on the bottom, and now with all these electronics, you know, I can see what's going on. He'll let that thing sit on the bottom, and he's had fish just dead. He dead sticks it right on the bottom.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he'll give it a good couple of pops if there's a fish around, and then he just lets it sit there. And he said they'll wait 30, 40, 50 seconds, and whoop, they wolf it up off the bottom.
That's crazy.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
Really?
Doesn't sound like there's a wrong way to use these baits. Maybe that's why they're so successful.
That is, I think you're exactly right. Because everybody does it different. People make
their own rigs. You suck as an angler and people put it on the bottom and do nothing and drink beer or whatever you sucky anglers do. I don't drink in the boat, but I mean, read a book, stay on your cell phone, whatever. This is how I caught on Eagle. I told the story in the last show. I was just over a walleye depository with my cousin in the boat, and I just was like, oh, I'm not doing anything. And I wasn't really paying attention to my line. I put a green goblin or a walleye color on, and I just put it down into the walleye stack, and I was putting the boat back and forth over the marker we had, just catching walleye, and it just, something was on my line all of a sudden. I wasn't even working it. No. It was just the action of the boat bringing it back and forth, and all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, something's on my, and I'm reeling it in, and I said to my cousin, I think it's just a big walleye. So we got the walleye net in his hands, and it came up, and we just saw this. You know, it was mid-40s side of the fish. It was an old fish. It wasn't fighting too hard. But, you know, Chris and I have taken trips to Eagle Lake where we busted our ass for 5 days, and I didn't catch anything. But me just sitting there doing nothing with the Red October bait on my line was the only success I had. So
it's funny because you hear a lot of those stories.
Yeah.
And it's hard to try and fish like that. I'm going to try and fish without effort. You know what I mean? Like, who does that?
Yeah, right.
Nobody does that.
There's all these stories of like everybody's firing casts, and then there's like some lady who doesn't even care sitting on the back of the boat, like,
my wife,
just jigging it straight down off the back.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden she ends up with a 55 or something. You know what
I mean?
Right. It's like, and she's just sitting there just, so obviously there's just something about them, the way that they move water, the way that they kind of just glide through the water, that looks very lifelike. And
this might sound a little over the top, but the ladies love the tubes.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you
especially go. The big sexy.
For many different reasons.
My wife has done.
But Mark.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, my wife has done that in the boat where she's just like, puts the tube out, dangling down, reading a book, just kind of, and all of a sudden she has a fish on. She's got fish, like one jigging, one casting, one trolling. But the one time was just like having a tube just dangling. So.
Yeah. You know. I think another big thing about the tubes is with all the different choices for rigs, that was another thing that was hard to break through with the general musky public, because they come to the booth and they're like, so what do I put in these things?
Yeah.
And you say, well, what are you fishing? What kind of water are you fishing? There's all these questions. If you want to be successful with the tube, you got to have the right rig in the tube to do what you want to do. And a lot of people don't want to think. You know what I mean? They want to just snap on a standard thing that shakes or blades or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they don't ever have to think. With the tube, you actually have to figure out what rig you want to get in there to accomplish what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
If you do that, you will have success with them. You know what I mean? So that's where at the booth, like at the Red October booth, it's a very, you know, it's a learning experience for everyone that comes in, because we literally work with every single person and try to lead them in the right direction of the rig that they need and do that whole thing. And, you know, there's some people who just don't want to deal with that. No. And they'll just be like, this is not for me.
Yeah. Not for me.
You know what? I'm one of those people, because I texted Mark yesterday. I'm like, hey, Mark, I want to get what are you asking for? Coffee?
Yeah.
No, I'm okay. Thanks. But I texted Mark the other day and I'm like, bring me something with treble hooks that I want to cast, because I love working these as jigs.
Yeah.
And they're my jig in the boat.
Right.
But that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'll take some pictures and post up so you guys can see what I'm looking at. But, wow, that's next level Red October bait right there. No, but I found myself in the boat this year saying to myself, I really wish – oh, these are beautiful. I really wish I had a Red October to cast in this situation, and I didn't. Because every time I see Mark, I'm like, I want different weights for my jigs, because I want to shore up my jig game. What color is this?
Oh, what do you want to call it?
Something. You think it's shad?
Cool. Oh, it's got a black dot and silver.
Yeah, it's gizzard shad.
So we're looking at some really nice baits, Chris. And
that purple and black one there, that was a really good seller this year.
Okay.
You guys know Doug Wegner and Jesse Baker?
Of course, they've both been on the show.
Okay, so
we want to get Jesse back. We reached out to her. She said this winter she's going to come back.
Obviously. Yeah, they put a couple orders in over this season, but that particular color, that black and purple, was one not only they had success on, but I sold a bunch of those around the country. Wait. And then the other one's Ice Cold Perch. That's a popular Team Rhino color.
Cool. Chris, I'm going to send you this picture right now so you know what we're talking
about. Nice.
Yeah, just for reference.
Well, I think Hans, you hit exactly what I was going to ask you about the rigging. And I remember Mark was talking to us about the mid retrieve and the vertical jigging. You have the single hook and the treble hooks and all that. Like, depending on what you're going to do, you have to pair that rig appropriately. So, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this: if you're casting tubes, I've actually, over my years of using them, I've morphed towards what Mark has always done, which is heavier weight and moving them faster. You know what I mean? Like everybody thinks they put a tube on.
Is it pretty heavy? No?
You feel like
that's 2 ounces.
That's a 2 ouncer. Those would be great. Like I love casting a 2 ounce bullet head.
My favorite.
Up on the St. Lawrence or whatever.
No, I'm just saying
2 ounce bullet head is killer. And I mean, basically, you have to move that bait fast. You know what I mean? It forces you to.
It's going to seem like a stone, yeah.
Right. So that whole situation, I always tell people, use a half ounce more than you feel comfortable with. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if somebody is using an ounce and a half and they feel good, put on the 2 ounce and work it a little bit with a little bit more desperation, and you're going to get more bites.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it literally.
So if you're in doubt, go a little bit heavier than lighter.
Absolutely. When you're casting it, it forces you to pop it more and make it more erratic. And it just. That is what, I mean, you know, everybody thinks that when fish are neutral or negative, you know, at midday, that you're supposed to do everything slow and try and feed it to them. It couldn't be any more the opposite. If you're trying to sneak out fish in gin clear water in the middle of the day on the Larry or wherever you are, you need to pop that thing fast. So it literally sends a jolt of electric through that fish's body that enlivens it and makes it decide instantaneously that I need to take this thing. You know what I mean? It doesn't want a slow lumbering pull bait. It doesn't want a blade thumping by where it's watching it from a mile away.
Right.
It wants this thing to come snapping into its life. You know what I mean? And give it no time to make a decision. It brings them to life and they grab it. You know what I mean? And like, that's where, you know, the heavier, faster jerk tube has become probably my staple on my boat.
But, you know,
I mean, we still do a lot of jigging and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's another piece to this, you know, the variety of riggings that you can utilize. And that is that people, they become long-term customers. And the reason they become long-term customers is because once you feel a little sense of ownership, like you have decided what rig you're going to put in, how you're going to use it, what body of water you're on, when you're doing that, the more points of
problem solving.
Yeah, where you have been, yeah, you, problem solving sounds,
but it's
sounds
like a, about right. Almost like you're customizing it to your liking.
Yes,
yeah, and not only that, but you feel the sense of accomplishment because you've made the decision that led to the catch.
Yeah, and I suck at building things, but you know, even when I put the hooks into my tube and I push it down like you taught me how to do it and bring the hooks out and stuff like that, and the way I'm so careful popping the hooks and the holes out of the baits through the baits. Yeah, you get a feeling that's, you know, that's my bait.
Yeah, and when you see it running the water, man, you know. Like, that when you got that thing rigged right, you know, when you're watching it on that first retrieve, you're like, eh, maybe I got to tweak it a little bit. Maybe I got to put the hole in a different area, put the eyelet through a different area. Once you got it running right, though, it's that confidence just sets in and there's no stopping you.
It's like something you got to build yourself. You're part of it.
My God, I gotta wait a whole like season now to use these, right? We just, you know, and like I'm driving over today and I look into the harbor off the bridge.
Man, it was gorgeous. I drove one on the lake today. There was one boat on Myers Bass right now.
It's a it looked beautiful now.
The harbor
too bad it's closed.
Can you believe it?
Like last
it
week,
finally set up in the last 4 days of the season,
right?
And then we had to fish. Poo-poo water for
25 mile an hour.
You said you were marking a lot of fish.
Yeah,
though.
The harbor is literally full of fish right now.
There's so many
fish.
If
it wasn't closed, somebody would get them. I mean, it finally set up.
All showed up
2 months later than it usually does. Yeah.
Right.
You know? So
they showed up the last 4 days, but the water was still dirty,
and it was real cold. I mean,
I was going to come out that day, and I talked to my buddy, and like, so we were going to come over, drive over and launch because making the trip in that wind, under the bridge, forget it, right?
Yeah, right.
And without the windshield, we'll get soaked, and it's just dangerous. And then I said to him, I said, the water is just going to be shit. Like, what are we doing? And then was just like, yeah, you know what? Let's just go ice fishing in January. And, you know, I'm talking about Dave, Chris. And, you know, he's not a big musky guy, but he's a big angler. So, you know, we go ice fishing every year. So we're going to go see Sean DeGagne up at Bear Creek and have some fun in January, which isn't.
Where is that now?
In North Bay. Nipissing. He's on the South Shore.
Do you guys mind if I ask Hans a question that I think would make for
Let's do it.
Opening?
Yeah, man.
Hans, how much time did you put in the harbor this year, do you think?
Oh, my gosh. Well, so I did 42 trips in the harbor this year.
Yeah.
And those probably averaged 10 to 12 hours each trip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I probably put 400 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got mine clocked at about 65 hours. I did a little from shore, was on a couple of different boats, and we didn't see a monster, you know, and the river was coughing up some big fish. Like, and it was kind of like, man, we go to the river, but if you want a chance to see like one of the fish that we got to see last year, that big giant monster, super fat, ridiculous fish, like you have to spend time around the pelagic muskies that are chasing those baits around.
I know what you're thinking.
Right? We saw one.
You don't have to say this.
Do you want to tell the story?
No.
Tell the story.
The show is not that important. Sorry, listeners.
He had a tough loss.
The only giant that we hooked, we did not.
Yeah.
We had a very, very, me and my longtime, all of our partners, yeah. Johnny Miller, that we, I mean, there's nobody that I, you know, would rather be battling a giant within him, and somehow the two of us did not get it done.
Well, not somehow. It was awesome. You had the bait hook itself inside the net, the rim of the net, which is really tough because you have nowhere for the fish to fall. Right?
It wouldn't fold. Yeah. The fish wouldn't fold. Big. It was really tough.
When it's that big, situation.
It's the top up on the boat. So he's got a top up on his boat, and if you're not used to it, and you're trying to back a fish up and move, you run into the top. And that's kind of what happened. It was kind of just like
it got weird real quick, and it was actually good. It was horrible, but it was good because it made us talk about it. Like we had to we had done well. Like when I have clients on the boat, I'm just bossing them around usually.
Yeah.
When I know that they're people that haven't done it before.
Yeah.
But like Johnny and I had fished together forever, but never caught one with the top up. You know what I mean? And the top did create problems for us that I wasn't foreseeing. And now I know, like, you got to stay hip to hip. You got to stay on the same side of the boat. And you got to control that, you know. And then just, you know, weird things happen.
It was huge, though.
And we're also not giving credit. I mean, it was a gigantic.
It was a big fish that fought for its life. And you know what? It's these.
It did everything right.
Yeah.
It did everything
you
right.
You said that to me in the boat.
And, you know. You got to give credit where credit's due. They beat us that. She beat us that time.
But it's these postmortems we do that make us better anglers. Because I can tell you, and it sucks that it came. This fish was the lesson, right? It couldn't have been a 50, right?
Yeah.
But you know, for us, we had a really tough trip at the Larry last time we were there. We lost 4 fish trolling.
Ooh.
Never happens, right?
All right.
So we had to take a really good look at our setup and our equipment, and we realized it sucked. And so what did we do this year? We made changes,
and it worked better.
And we hit on 4 fish, and we landed them all.
Yeah.
Right,
nice ones too, bro. Nice
fish too. Jeez, really nice fish. And so, you know what? You guys are probably never going to lose another fish like that again.
But well,
again,
don't say that.
Yeah. let's say the chances are reduced.
Hey, we've had a real good track record for the last real long time of finding big fish. The thing is. This time it didn't work out, but it also, just like you said, it made you, if you're a good angler, when something bad happens, you know, you got to look back into yourself and see if there was something we could do to make it better. You know?
Right. So especially if someone you're going to be
even after doing it for this long. Yeah. But on the same day that it happened, we got ourselves to the point where we were like, would we have rather, had
the experience or not seen that
or
fish
not
at all.
Seen the fish at all.
Definitely
and we were
had
like,
it.
Of course,
definitely
have the experience. Now I wish I had a GoPro runner. That's where we should have had that going, because it would have been, not to mention me almost breaking the windshield off of my boat and smashing a Timmy hose tomahawk style in pure disgust. And John, you know, toppling to the floor into a fetal position for a little while.
But, nice floor. It's a nice boat floor for lying down and
jiu-jitsu.
You know what? When you guys have that next victory, it's going to make it all
absolutely, absolutely. We're both ready for that. You know, it'll happen.
Yeah. So. Just to give you guys your listeners a gauge, Johnny Miller, he fishes really hard. He's caught fish up to 57 inches long. And his comment after losing this to me, when he's telling me the story, was like, that was the one I was chasing for 20 years. And you look at his pictures of. So it was a monster, but like, you know, last year we got to see that monster, and that's how I felt about that one. I was like, I didn't even know that existed. Like, it was so fat and just weirdly fat. Like, you know, when it turned upside down, it looked like I could step on it and just like take off into the distance.
Right.
You know, it really did. It was like, you know, I've only weighed fish on a scale in front of me up to 45 pounds, but this one looked like it could have like ate that one. It was just so weirdly fat.
Which fish are you talking about?
The really big one Hans got last year.
The really big one they landed,
And then Hans saw both fish, so he saw the fish this year, too.
That wasn't the same guy in that picture, was it?
No, that's my buddy Dan King.
That's a different guy, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's Dan King's fish, So he's a – but man, I couldn't be happier for anybody to catch a fish, that dude. He's an awesome dude.
Yeah.
But that was a monster fish. Like Hans –
You sent me a text from the boat, and you're like, do not – post this. My knees are shaking right now, and I'm like, oh my god, here we go. I don't remember what I was doing. I think I was even out, maybe on the water too, and it's just like, oh,
I was making tubes, and I heard ding, and I took a quick peek at my phone. I was like, holy shit.
It's like when Kennedy got shot, right? Yeah, I always know where you were, right?
Hans was like six, you know, keep in mind when you look at those pictures, Hans is 6'6" tall.
Yeah.
And I've seen fish that if I was holding would have looked like I was falling over, and Hans looks like he's holding a 38-incher. And he's holding that fish, and he blew it up, and he had it for his booth this year. And that was like a life-size image, and like the tail just has like the tail itself was like ridiculously fat. Like it just looked like the Hans of fish, basically.
Yeah, right.
That's what it looked like.
Right.
So it was monstrous. And it was and then when I saw Hans's face and Johnny Miller's face talking about losing the one this year, saying, like, you know, it wouldn't bend and fit into the net. It was sitting across the net and it wouldn't bend to go into the, like, its head was over the one side and its tail was over the other side. And it was just so fat. It just was like, screw you. I'm out of here. Like, so. Yeah,
it was a big, everything.
It hurts to hear the story and I'm sure it hurts to tell it. You know?
I did not expect you to tell the story.
Oh, I
didn't come here for you to tell the story.
You know, that was our one shot this year because it was a tough year. The harbor never set up like it did last year. We didn't have any good winds to stain up the water. We didn't have any seiches, although 4 days before the season end, we had a 5-foot seiche. The water went up super high and the water got brown. And right now, when you drove over the Peace Bridge, you looked down there and you saw it's greenish and guac colored and it's just ready to smash one.
And it's calm.
You know what I mean?
It's calm.
Right. So basically, like, this was what we needed in October and November.
Right.
And it didn't happen. We still had our shots. I mean, we still got 16 fish in 42 trips, which is, you know, horrible for any, you know, low
for the harbor. Thing.
The harbor is low density, like, to the max, just like all of our northeastern you know, trophy waters. I mean,
the lowest.
Right. It's a tough fishery, but it turns out magnificent slobs. But you got to be willing to grind.
It ain't
no joke. But this year just wasn't our year, but it was nobody's year. Like, I don't think there was this in the harbor did not choke up one single giant.
Yeah.
But
it
choked up one, and then we screwed it up. So, I mean, like, John Pencil got two beauties in the river.
River was good.
Yeah.
Spring and fall.
Yeah, the river was pretty good.
Yep. The river was what seemed to be
best year ever.
Best year that
I had. Best year ever.
And I only fished like twice on the river this year.
I think our club, the NMA's top 10, is all 50 plus.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. I was in the top 10 with a 49.5 inch rim out. I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
Yeah, I think it is. All 50 plus.
That's insane. Mostly on the river, all out of the river, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So the river, though, like, for guys that are listening, like, the river, Lake Erie flows down into, like, the Niagara River, which flows over the falls down to Lake Ontario. And the river is definitely a better fishery in terms of catching fish. Like, if you want to catch a muskie, you go there. And this year it turned out a lot of nice fish. But personally, I've never seen, like, a fish out of that Niagara River that I was like, whoa, like a whoa fish. There's, like, one or two up by the very head of the river that are close to that. And I just can't remember any other ones. You know, they're really fat, beautiful, like healthy muskies. But the way I look at it kind of is like the river is more like you're playing a lottery that you can win $1 million. But when you're in the harbor, you're playing the lottery where you win the Powerball. And like you're not going to win the Powerball all the time. It's going to be a lot of time spent not winning the Powerball. Like I went this year, like I said, I don't know. I had the hours written down, like well over 50 hours in the harbor. And we didn't have a rip on the boat that I was on. Like not once, but it's just a tough fishery. But you're not going fishing. You're going looking for the possible one that's really huge, like that makes you look at muskies in a different way.
Yeah, you're not after fish; you're after the fish, right, Chris? We always say it.
Well, it sounds like they contacted that fish.
Just
didn't work out. But it sounds like that's
on the same bait, the same distance back. So Hans makes his own baits. They're awesome. Like it's my confidence baits. He's got a one called the Carver. And it's like a deep diving crankbait, but a skinny body, right? So why I personally like it because I feel like the fish hit it and they stick on it because they slide back on it. It's not super – it's a little bit skinnier like a perch bait, but constructed with like the same like really, really toughness. And they run at very precise depths, you know, and he was running at the same depth as the big one that came last year. And same color. He calls it the tank charmer. Is that right, Hunt?
Yeah, tank charmer.
The tank charmer because it charms tanks. And I mean – I'm a believer. You know, I've seen it with my own eyes, like nullius in verba. You know, show me. Don't take anybody's word for it, right? Just see. And it was a beast.
Well, at the Odyssey this year, I don't really buy baits at the Odyssey. I ran to the booth and said, "Hey, Hans. hey, how you doing?" I'm like, "Which bait was it?" That's all I said to him. It's like, "Which bait? What?" I'm like, "I want to know the bait you caught the fish on because I want to buy it."
So everyone did
fish in your backyard and run it, and
I got fish on it this year in the river, and it's a confidence bait. Obviously, you see a fish like that get caught on it. You know, Dan King's fish. I got to see that with my own eyes, and I'm like, all right, sold. You know what I mean? So, and then to do it 2 years in a row and a fish that's just, you know, on the same exact scenario, it's like now it's confidence. Now it's a pattern. Now it's like what Mark talks about when you're figuring out the tubes and like you run them the way you want to run them. If you're having input into the problem solving process of fishing, that's the fun part of it, right? The fun part is it's like jujitsu, right? It's like it's problem solving under duress, and that's problem solving under duress. And the duress is grind, bitch. Like grind for five more days. Question everything you're doing. You know what I mean? Or believe. And it's like hard to like, you know, not stray from your mind. You want to like, you know,
Trolling the harbor, trolling the Larry, trolling Georgian Bay, French River, whatever. It's all a mental. Yeah. You know, it's truly the, you need to, you know,
believe.
You need to believe and it's you need test. To be mentally tough because it can get to anybody. I mean, I had numerous stretches where, I mean, on the harbor where I had four biteless days in a row.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not a bite.
It's tough as a guide. I mean? It's tough
right. As a guide, you're sitting there, you're like, but with that being said, at any given moment, on any one of those days, if you would have turned the other way at some point, you might have, you know, run into
how do your customers respond to that?
Well, for one, I'm very honest about what the harbor is from the get-go. I tell everybody, you come for 3 days, there's a chance you don't have a bite.
Yeah.
But there's also a chance that you get a 50-pounder. And not a silly person's 50-pounder, a legitimate 50-pounder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a, you know, a real giant fish. And they exist, but
it's gonna be
super hard.
It's going to be fat if it's out of that harbor.
Absolutely. Here's the thing. You don't have many rods go off, but when the rods do go off, you have a high percentage of good fish.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's – which equates to low percentage.
Right. But
there's no place there's no place – I mean, the guys that fish, you know, the St. Lawrence in the fall, the guys – any fall fishery in the Northeast, you can catch those giant round Great Lakes fish. However – it is not easy no matter where you go.
Right.
And this is probably on the harder end of it. You know what I mean? In the harbor.
So. Yeah.
But, you know, those Lake Erie fish are incredible. And, you know, just me thinking back about all those wonderful moments, I'm not going to stop. You know what I mean? Like, because there's more of those giants out there. And you just, if you don't do it, you don't get them. You know what I mean? So I'm lucky enough to have a situation where I can just grind the harbor.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be people that are with me that are going to get really lucky. You know what I mean? And they're going to get
hopefully the fish of a lifetime. Hopefully they're sitting at this table.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would love it.
I can't wait to go back next year. Like it's different fishing with you guys. Like, I want to get a fish. Obviously, I think, you know, we're all young enough that hopefully for years and years to come, we're fishing together. But honestly, I just love sitting in the boat and talking.
We have a great time on the boat, too. That's another thing.
Like, I don't even realize. Like, he's at the end of the day, he's bringing the lines up, and I don't even know what he's doing. I don't even realize it's over.
It's time to go.
Right? Because we're still talking about everything we want to talk about. There's seemingly not enough hours in the day to –
We had some philosophies, bro.
We
did jujitsu. We broke down all topics. It was interesting stuff.
Talking about Bitcoin. You got the Bitcoin shirt on today. You know, repping.
You turned me up.
My Swarm Academy hat on. Repping, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Swarm Academy, that's thank you for wearing that.
Yeah,
man. Bitcoin, you got me into Bitcoin, man. And it's like – but that helped me see everything. It helped me see, like, it's like jujitsu. It helped me see all the other things.
I got Chris into it, too, and he hates me for it. But this year, Chris, you're going to love me.
I don't think you got me into it, but you did speak a lot about it. But, yeah, I did take some of your – I actually don't hate you. It's that's a strategy. No, I mean, for your Bitcoin advice, but the strategy that we talked about that I explained to you, I'm still on course.
Yeah,
I haven't changed it.
I know
so I'm happy with where I am at, but I could see how it could be difficult for other people who maybe are much more invested than I am. But no, it's a fascinating topic, Josh. Anyways, just to discuss the whole decentralization process.
Don't even say that word. We're an hour in, Chris.
We'll be here for five more hours.
Tread lightly.
Yeah, this is our whole boat conversation last time.
Yeah.
I want to say one thing about Bitcoin, because I've heard a lot of like musky guys and, you know, people that look at Bitcoin, they don't understand it maybe, or they haven't taken the time to understand it. That was me before too. Frank taught me about Bitcoin, and I already understood a little bit about decentralization, but then once I really grasped it, I realize it for me personally, I don't look at it as an investment. I look at it as a protest. I'm buying it and saying fuck, or, you know, I don't want to swear in your podcast.
You can swear.
But saying fuck you to the people that are controlling our money.
Especially if you're swearing to them.
Yeah. So like they can't control Bitcoin. It's very hard. And people are going to say they can control electricity. Okay. They control electricity for everything or whatever you want to say. But Bitcoin is decentralized. And when you take the time to understand what that means, you can apply it a lot more places in your life besides just money. But money is a really good place to apply.
So. Yeah. Okay, well said. All right, that's part one in our chat with the original founders of Red October Bates. What a great discussion. And part two is more of the same. So join us next week for part two of this amazing chat with these anglers. These guys are total aces, fantastic musky fishermen, fantastic people, and we hope you like it. In the meantime, head over to iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcasts, and please leave a review. If you like the show, we'd love to hear from you. And also, if you own a business of any size in the fishing industry, contact us for pricing about our sponsorship program. We can accommodate large businesses, small businesses, anybody. We have packages for all sorts of businesses. So please reach out via social media or on the website. Thank you for listening, guys. Bye-bye.
A small-town sheet metal mechanic come to build one of Canada's most iconic fishing lodges? I'm your host, Steve Nidzwicki, and you'll find out about that and a whole lot more on the Outdoor Journal Radio Network's newest podcast, Diaries of a Lodge Owner. But this podcast will be more than that. Every week on Diaries of a Lodge Owner, I'm going to introduce you to a ton of great people, share their stories of our trials, tribulations, and inspirations. Learn and have plenty of laughs along the way.
Meanwhile, we're sitting there bobbing along, trying to figure out how to catch a bass. And we both decided one day we were going to be on television doing a fishing show.
My hands get sore a little bit when I'm reeling in all those bass in the summertime, but that's might be for more fishing than it was punching.
You so confidently you said, "Hey, Pat, have you ever eaten a drum?"
Find Diaries of a Lodge Owner now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories. No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and musky tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style. Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and musky shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.